Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
In for Sean Pendergast, I'm Sean Bajani, along with Seth Payne this morning. Good morning. A lot of people just joining us, Seth, and we got a text during the break from the 720 just joining in and so excited. Are you guys going to fight or what? People have not forgotten.
Yeah, I had completely forgotten that Sean and I were supposed to box. I'll tell you one thing, Sean. Although I have the supreme confidence in my ability, there's not a chance in hell I'm ever going to do any kind of a boxing match unless it's a life or death situation.
Oh, come on.
I messed around with boxing enough when I was younger that I know how grueling and tiring it is. And I don't need to stroke out at the age of 50 because I tried to do either a charity boxing match or get in a bar fight or anything else like that. It's exhausting. What? That's where I gave you credit. If you made it last past the second or third round, I'd be screwed. I would be absolutely screwed.
I've been floating out the idea just for fun. You know, maybe like on a 6-10 day one of these years, maybe this year. I don't know. If you ever get out to Home Run Dugout, you know, they can set the boxing ring up there in the middle of the baseball field and we can just at least two rounds and let's see what we got.
I don't know, though, because we'd be wearing those big comical heavy gloves, you know, and where it becomes much more about technique and scoring shots.
Nah, let's go bare knuckles, bro. Come on.
Okay, all right. Well, there, I like that. Yeah.
Let's go old school bare knuckles. Why not? YOLO.
My George Foreman overhand right will be your good morning on that day.
Yeah, it'd be good morning, good afternoon, and good night. Sean Bajani in for Sean Pendergast. The Texans' biggest strength, weakness, X factor, and more. Those were the topics in a recent piece by Pro Football Focus. And I always love these. I thought, actually, when you'd sent me this, it was the one that I'd read and talked about already, like last week with PC. But no, this is different. Now they're coming hot and heavy, fast and furious. And there have been a number of these pieces out, you know, looking at various NFL teams, Seth. And when they get to the Texans, I feel like there's been one glaring omission from the national perspective here recently, and I can't remember the fella that did one for ESPN about a week or so ago, but not one single solitary mention of the offensive line. And I was like, I could not believe it. I was like, well, that's all people are talking about down here.
I like this one because what they're doing, they're just ranking the strengths of the rosters. So based on how they grade the players and everything. And it kind of takes coaching out of it. And with every Pro Football Focus piece, it usually turns into, all right, I'm always skeptical of these guys. Let's see if they're full of crap or if they say something positive about us. I'm going to say, oh, yeah, these guys know what they're talking about. But I did what shocked me was, I wasn't expecting them out of all the 32 teams as they rank just the strength of the roster because all the power rankings, have the Texans around middle of the pack for the most part.
Yeah.
They ranked the Texans 7th on just the strength of their roster. And, you know, looking at it objectively and using the numbers that they used, I could see where they would come by that, especially given the strengths on defense that they have.
Yeah, yeah. And that's their biggest strength in this PFF article, pass defense, right? Between their pass rush and secondary, the Texans fielded one of the best pass defenses in the NFL. They were one of the three teams to place in the top 10 in both team PFF pass rush grade and PFF coverage grades. And the others were Super Bowl 59 challengers, Eagles and Chiefs. Houston has one of the league's best edge pairings in Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter to go along with a young, impressive cornerback duo in Derek Stingley Jr. and Kamari Lassiter. I was waiting for them to mention, oh, yeah, they got Kalen Bullock and Jalen Petrie and Jimmy Ward and Ronald Darby. But they did not mention the Darby situation. Yeah. Retired now.
Yeah, news alert for anybody. Ronald Darby, who many of you probably didn't realize was actually on the Texans, retired yesterday. The pass defense, we've talked a lot about this on the show. The defense in general did so many things really, really well last year. They were top five in so many different categories like TFLs, sacks, etc., interceptions. And yet one of the things that they struggled in was the deep ball and the big plays. And that's one of the few areas where they weren't elite defensively, and they're actually bad in some respects. And that's really the one thing they have to clean up. And a lot of it last year I could attribute to just having two rookies in the secondary. And then the injuries at the safety position where you're rotating various guys in, MJ Stewart, Eric Murray, et cetera, et cetera. I think that should get hemmed up this year. If you look at the cornerbacks alone, if you look at Kamari Lassiter and Derek Stingley, obviously Derek Stingley was really, really good. But Kamari Lassiter, you start a rookie and you think, okay, there's going to be some hiccups along the way.
Yeah.
From week 9 onward, he allowed 21.7 yards per game, 50% completion rate, 59.3 passer rating when targeted. He just did all of those things that just you want to see a rookie get better along the season, and he did. He improved, and by the end of the season, he was kind of screwed over and not even being included in a lot of the rookie of the year conversations just because he was a second string or a second round pick and superseded his expectations. And I think also in a weird way, probably didn't get enough credit because he was playing opposite of Derek Stingley. When in reality, if you think about it, he should be getting extra credit because teams aren't going to test Derek Stingley.
They'll be testing Lassiter.
They're going to test the rookie cornerback. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And the fact that he improved as much as he did and played as well as he did in the second half of the season, despite having an all-pro cornerback on the other side, that makes it that much more impressive.
Yeah, no, I think you hit the nail on the head, which it doesn't make any sense. But look, when you're playing a defense like this and you continue to play the way that Lassiter did last year, he'll get his. He will get his. I absolutely think that. So the biggest weakness from last year, offensive line, there's no secret about that. The write-up briefly in PFF is C.J. Stroud experienced a slight regression from his incredible rookie season, most of which can be attributed to his offensive line's failures. The Texans dealt with the league's 8th lowest graded offensive line last year, which they graded 65.9. And making matters worse, they say, is that the team traded 5-time Pro Bowl left tackle Laremy Tunsil to the Commanders this offseason. I've been waiting to talk to you about this because I understand the offensive line. It was their biggest weakness last year. But to not feel any better coming into this season is a little silly to me. And it's bigger than just, well, they can't be that bad again this year, can they? Even right. If it's without Laremy Tunsil, I just tend to think about it like, okay, one, in Caserio, I feel like when does he start to gain a little bit of the credit, you know, in constructing the offense this year? And I know we have to see it first, but the way that he and D'Amico have constructed the defense and just the overall roster to this point in time, like I feel like they've earned a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. And then, you know, lastly, my main point is, why can't you be good collectively? If you had Laremy Tunsil, who was the best at his particular position, but for 2 straight years you put out one of, if not the worst offensive line in the entire league, why can't you have something at least you know, mediocre to average this year with a whole bunch of different dudes that, you know, have had some success and have been starters before in the NFL. Their veteran experience mixed with, you know, a good young core that you've drafted the last few years.
Well, two of their worst offensive linemen from last year that they don't mention here are Bobby Slowick and Dalton Schultz. Horrible offensive linemen. Horrible.
I was waiting for you to get to Slowick, yeah.
Yeah, right, and Slowick is a big part of that. So and this is the thing. There are plenty of offensive lines in any given year that are either solid or actually genuinely good without having a lot of high-caliber players along the offensive line. And it's because they're well-coached and because they have a good offensive coordinator. And a lot of times, if you look at the Ravens, that offensive line vastly overperformed compared to what you would look at with their depth chart. Mm-hmm. That's an extreme example because part of that was that, yeah, when Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry are in the backfield, it's a lot easier to be a good offensive lineman. But they were also really well-coached. So it's a projection, though. You can't sit at the beginning of the season with a bunch of new pieces on the offensive line, many of whom really don't titillate you at all, and say, well, yeah, but they're going to be better coached, and there you go. That's where Nick Caley becomes the huge X factor on the offensive line. That's where Cole Popovich becomes a huge X factor. Yes, they can be a solid offensive line with the guys they have right now, but it takes good coaching, and it also takes good play from the tight ends. And, you know, there were times last year where, yes, Dalton Schultz is not great in pass protection whatsoever, but there were also times where, from a fan's perspective, I'm thinking of the Green Bay game. They had a full turn protection. That's where basically, so that tight end, Dalton Schultz was aligned at the left. He's got a block down to his right. And then they send a blitz off the left side. And to the fan watching, you look and think, how could Dalton Schultz let that guy run free?
Yeah.
Like he was doing what he was supposed to do on that play. It was a Bobby Slowick issue. In the first half of the season, especially, defenses were baiting the Texans into using the pass protection that the defense wanted to see. And it was ugly. They were able to align and they knew what protection was going to be called, and then they were going to be able to exploit it. It got better as the season went along, but it was kind of an illustration of just how primitive in a lot of respects Bobby Slowick was in that second season. And he wasn't able to adapt to teams having a full season off season to study what they did the previous year. And then how do you adapt in season? That's where Bobby Slowick really fell short. And we don't know if Nick Caley's going to be any better at it. If he is, they can be a better offensive line despite not having the same PFF grades as Laremy Tunsil or whatever.
Well, and what about this too? You know, maybe just the difference between, you know, Slowick to now Nick Caley, but what about the responsibilities placed on CJ Stroud? A play particularly like that you're referencing in Green Bay, that's something that I think we'd all like to believe that CJ Stroud could recognize pre-snap. But he didn't have the flexibility or the ability to, you know, switch out of that or make a line change, you know, the last second before he snaps the ball. This year, what we've been told is that, hey, he's going to have more responsibility and the ability to kind of make some of those changes. You know, how much does that actually help, you know, the tight end play, you know, the things that Dalton Schultz maybe gotten blamed for, you know, last season into this year?
Right. And that's where that's another huge variable, is that he is still a young quarterback, and the great NFL quarterbacks that can handle everything at the line of scrimmage, no matter how smart they are, it takes a few years to work into that. And CJ hasn't had experience doing it in his first 2 years. So if they do add more to his plate as he's learning a new offense, you got to be careful with just how much you heap on it immediately, because he still has to just let it loose and play football. You know, like the Chargers game, it felt like a decided turning point after he had that incredible scramble play with the deep shot to Xavier Hutchinson, where he fumbled the ball. CJ fumbled the ball, fumbled the snap, and then picked it up and then threw it to Xavier Hutchinson. It felt like after that, CJ he played football after that. He just kind of let it loose.
Yeah.
And you got to get to the point where he's not thinking so much that he stops just letting it loose. That's going to be one of the big challenges for Nick Caley. But the, you go to that Kansas City game, the fourth quarter, I mean, the Chiefs did what they do, which is, all right, Steve Spagnuolo, the defensive coordinator, just releases the hounds with the blitz in the fourth quarter. And the Chiefs are so good at disguising their looks that I, man, there are a lot of quarterbacks, veteran quarterbacks, that would really struggle to set the right protection in those moments. Mm-hmm. But especially when you look at the Texans and how primitive they were in a lot of respects, they just had no answers for it. And it doesn't help when your running backs can't pick up blitzes either. So, like, all of that can get better just through, like, on the margins with all of these little things, with the actual play of the offensive line, with when the, whether the quarterback's setting the protection, with whether the running backs know who they're picking up in blitz protection.
Here's an interesting one. In this piece by PFF, the X factor for 2025 for them is new left tackle Cam Robinson. Their write-up is Cam Robinson, whom Houston signed in free agency, will attempt to fill Laremy Tunsil's shoes. He's been consistently below average in his career, failing to grade as a top 40 tackle during any of his eight seasons. If he can't adequately protect C.J. Stroud's blind side, second-round pick Arianti Urseri could be given a shot. This is interesting to me, Seth, because I don't know really. When you talk about Arianti Urseri, he didn't play left tackle last week in the OTA sessions, like, outright. Like, they had him at guard, I think, initially. And then he got some left tackle reps, you know, with the second or third iteration of whatever offensive line that they put out there. But when we talk about this guy, or, you know, the people on the outside looking in, like PFF or ESPN or whatever, Arianti Urseri, okay, yeah, maybe he'll be given a shot at left tackle if Robinson doesn't work out or Trent Brown doesn't work out. But in the meantime, the Texans are going to play him maybe on the interior. Maybe they won't. DeMeco says he's a tackle, not a guard, that whole thing. How do you see this? If you're Arianti Urseri and you're a second-round pick, you're coming in, you've played left tackle, but they're moving you all around. Can that be beneficial, or can that hurt more
your first year
in the league?
It can be beneficial. I think right now they're in that phase of they're going to give him some snaps at right tackle and see how he picks it up. There's a whole lot of muscle memory involved. And going back to, hey, with CJ, like, it takes reps. It takes reps. It takes reps. And I think they're just going to want to see how he adapts to it. I'm optimistic about Arianti Urseri right now because it's easy to be optimistic about Arianti Urseri right now. I think one big difference between him and Blake Fisher is that when Blake Fisher came in, he was widely regarded as, okay, this guy's probably a two-year project. He's got some physical maturation that needs to occur. People always talk about getting an NFL weight room like they don't have weight rooms in college or something. He's lifted plenty of weight. Sometimes with offensive linemen, it's just a matter of physically maturing and putting on your full-grown man weight. I don't have that concern with Arianti Urseri. He is physically ready to go. It's a matter of whether he can just pick up the technique and whether he's good enough to play in the NFL. I'm more concerned right now. If you start off with Cam Robinson at left tackle, that's cool. He's been passable. Like, whatever his PFF grades were, I've looked at him as like basically just a passable to just solid, I suppose, left tackle. One of the weird things is that some of his best games have been against the Texans. So I'm a little bit, I've watched Cam Robinson have some good games versus some really good Texans pass rushers. So I might be skewed a little bit more positive on him than I should be.
Yeah.
But it's that right tackle position, and whether it's Blake Fisher or Arianti Urseri, I think the biggest thing is that I just need one of those guys to look like he's ready to start at right tackle, and that if they like Titus Howard at right guard where he's been playing during OTAs, then I feel a lot more solid about things. Even though Titus hasn't been nearly like a Pro Bowl caliber guard or anything, he does bring some things to the table above and beyond his PFF scores that I like with him at guard. So that right tackle position is where I'm more worried than anything. It's just that you gotta be sure you don't have a liability. You can't have Blake Fisher out there getting destroyed by George Karloftis the way he was last year in the final game.
Yeah, you know, I was going to tell you that somebody did some work earlier this offseason. They put together Cam Robinson's numbers against some of the best pass rushers in the league just from this past season. And I think against Will Anderson, Myles Garrett, and a couple other guys, like, the numbers were very good, like, very few pressures allowed. I think it was Garrett, you know, go figure. You know, he ended up getting like three pressures and a sack on a quarterback or whatever. But then I'm looking at Doug Farrar on Twitter. just a few months ago. In Week 18, Vikings left tackle Cam Robinson allowed a sack and 11 total pressures against Lions' evil pass rush concepts. So the point was is that, hey, Robinson's played really well against some of the league's more elite pass rush.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's also had some bugaboos as well.
The whole thing about that is, and this is what was weird about Cam Robinson, is that he got traded midway through the season in Minnesota, and he had a hard time adjusting to a different scheme and put some of his worst film on from the NFL late in the season in Minnesota. And I think where Caserio probably looked at it, and when he thought about the market and what it was saying about Cam Robinson, is, man, a lot of people are scared off by this poor performance in Minnesota. He was much better. The Jacksonville version of him was much better than Minnesota. And I give him a pass for getting swapped mid-season and having to adapt all that stuff.
Fair,
The thing about Cam Robinson that's interesting, if you think about the guy he replaces in Laremy Tunsil, Cam Robinson is not nearly the pass protector that Laremy Tunsil is, but it seemed like there was a decided emphasis on sheer mass at the offensive tackle position this offseason. Because Cam Robinson is 6'6", 335 pounds. Ariante Ursery is 6'6", 335 pounds. Trent Brown is damn near 6'9", large human being.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's even going to play this year. He's in his 30s coming off of a torn patellar tendon. But I think if you're trying to emphasize physicality, I can tell you from a defensive lineman's perspective, like going back when the Ravens won their first Super Bowl, the one thing about that offensive line they had there is that, remember, that was Jonathan Ogden, Orlando Brown Sr., their inset Blackshear, the guard. They had some just massive human beings. And no matter how good one guy is individually, when you're facing, 1,700 pounds of human mass on an offensive line, it sucks.
Good
like
Lord.
It just,
yeah.
And I think and even moving Titus Howard down inside, he is a massive dude.
Big
as
dude.
A guard.
Yeah.
That I think there's a little bit of an emphasis that, yeah, we have to improve the technique, but also if you've got five ogres up there, it presents challenges for defenses.
Yeah. Great point. So PFF had Cam Robinson as their X factor for 2025. In my opinion, this rookie to watch for the Texans, according to PFF, might end up being their X factor. Jaden Higgins. They say this about Jaden Higgins. He, along with Jalen Noel, Higgins led all power forward receivers with a 90.5 PFF receiving grade this past season, has great size for the position at 6'4", 215. If he can hit the ground running as a rookie, he can seize John Mechie thirds the job as the starting outside receiver opposite Nico Collins. I feel like that's already something that we've kind of, you know, expected him to do. John Mechie's very much under the gun, but
this is why PFF you have to take with a grain of salt. Like, what? Seize John Mechie's job as the starting outside receiver opposite Nico Collins? What the hell are you talking about?
They're looking at the depth chart.
Oh, like, who? Has there been a single sports radio host, sports writer, blogger, or dude on X in the city of Houston that has framed it this way? Can one of these guys seize John Mechie's job? Because apparently it's John Mechie's job to lose. What the hell are you talking about? I'm so glad you read that, because I had skimmed right through this earlier and I hadn't recognized that. No, it is not John Mechie's job to lose. What the hell are you talking about, PFF? Can Jaden Higgins be the guy? Can they go? I mean, at times, depending on, I do very much feel like it, with Nick Haley, much like it has been with New England in the past or with the Rams, I mean, you don't, just because a guy is a slot receiver doesn't mean he can't be one of your top three. You can't have two of those guys as your top three receivers.
Yeah.
So it's not like Christian Kirk only lines up in the slot always and forever, that Jalen Noel can only be a slot. But yeah, I think with Jaden Higgins, it's an all but, unless he really somehow vastly disappoints or gets injured, I would expect him to be the guy who's lining up opposite of Nico Collins early in the season.
Sure. And I think for that reason, isn't he like the X factor for the Texans? Like, I get the focus on the offensive line, but if we're removing offensive line, Cam Robinson, all of that stuff, you know, you've got Nico Collins, you've got Christian Kirk. Now A lot of people, I feel like, forget about Christian Kirk and maybe focus a little bit too much on his injury history. Well, he had a broken collarbone last year. That's a lot better for me than, you know, some soft tissue injury that you need to be worried about him coming off of. Christian Kirk's been a 1,000-plus yard receiver in this league before. He's damn near done it twice. He could be that guy, in my opinion, for the Texans. But Jaden Higgins, given his size, and never mind even just the Nico comps and just appearance alone, isn't he offensively a potential X factor for this team in just doing, you know, maybe whatever Nick Haley decides to do, and I hope they ended up spreading it out more and stop running so many bunch sets and things like that, but he could really open up this offense in totality this year.
Yeah, and a lot of it with him where I'm optimistic about Jaden Higgins is his calling card in a lot of ways is his length and his sure hands and his ability to win contested catches. Mm. And when you're paired up with a quarterback like C.J. Stroud, who, if he's healthy and throwing the ball the way we know he's capable of throwing, when he is genuinely a ball placement specialist, that there's going to be opportunities for him. With the amount of attention that Nico Collins gets, there's going to be opportunities. If Woody Marks can be a viable passing threat from the backfield, and that's not a huge thing I'm leaning on early on.
Yeah.
That there will be opportunities for Jaden Higgins. And as long as he makes the improvement he needs to make in making the transition from college to the NFL, I think he's going to get his opportunities. So in my mind, it's his job to lose. If you're thinking about just lining up conventionally with one big guy on the outside on the left and one big guy on the outside on the right, Jaden Higgins makes the most sense. But he is still a rookie who hasn't done anything in the NFL
Fair.
Right now.
Yeah, 100%.
And then other than him, I don't think it's anybody's job to lose. Like for them to put John Metchie in there is written as a guy who's got the job to lose on lining up. Who, by the way, like John Metchie takes more snaps in the slot than on the outside. I don't get.
Like I said, they're looking at the depth chart.
I'm pissed off at this whole segment.
They're looking at the Yarlads depth chart. That's it. Yeah. That's all you need to know about.
Oh yeah, they make no mention here of Titus Howard playing at guard either. That's the, you know, I don't expect them to know exactly what's going on in OTAs all over the place. But that's one of the big wild cards is just exactly even what position are these guys going to play on the offensive line.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Grilling season is in full swing, and Whole Foods Market has the essentials to make summer meals simple, flavorful, and affordable. With great everyday prices across the store, it's easy to build a crowd-pleasing spread without sacrificing quality. The 365 by Whole Foods Market brand offers a wide selection of grilling favorites, like no antibiotics ever chicken thighs, ground beef, wild-caught salmon burgers, and uncured hot dogs. There are also plenty of sides to choose from, including organic salad kits, kettle cooked chips, tortilla chips, and bold zesty salsas. For toppings and marinades, look for organic condiments like no sugar added ketchup and yellow mustard, plus spice rubs and sauces to bring extra flavor. To round things out, pick up sparkling water, organic lemonade, and pints of ice cream, plus organic cake cones for an easy summer dessert. There are so many ways to save on summer grilling favorites at Whole Foods Market.
Seth Payne, Sean Bajani in for Sean Pendergast this morning. this story about Stephon Diggs, could the Patriots actually cut him? Or has that actually, at least that take, spoiled worse than convenience store milk? The reason why I ask that is because, look, Scott Zolak, who works for Patriots Radio, recently said that the Patriots could part ways with Stephon Diggs and pay him absolutely nothing. Well, before we'll get to this, Mike Florio took a look at the contract, because of course he did. But the reason why I ask if it could, you know, this whole notion that he'd be cut spoiled worse than, you know, gas station milk. I saw a video of Stephon Diggs yesterday practicing.
He was out at OTAs.
He was out at OTAs. He's practicing. So by verbiage of this contract, according to Mike Florio, he's got to pass a physical and practice for his guarantees to begin to kick in. Yeah. Did they kick in yesterday?
No, I don't know. That hasn't been reported yet, because whatever the physical might be and however much he was practicing yesterday, I don't know if that triggers it or not. What Zolak had said was that it wasn't about him on the boat or those videos necessarily. It was a question about whether he was all in and whether he really, you know, cared enough or whatever it might be. That's where it gets really interesting.
Sounds like it all works together to me.
Yeah. Well, and that's, if you're going to cut him, you can't cut him for missing voluntary OTAs. Like the NFLPA would be all over that. It would be hard to cut him. It's not like North Dallas 40 back in the day where you can cut Nick Nolte because he is some smoking a joint. it would be very, very dicey. The Patriots would probably end up having to settle or get arbitration and pay some chunk of money.
Yeah.
I would be really surprised if they bailed on him this early in the process, in that whether he passed the physical yesterday or not, I'd be really, really surprised if they do. I do feel like the Texans handled the Stephon Diggs situation perfectly, because people were skeptical about Caserio kind of modifying that contract to basically make it a one-year deal after they traded for him. But I think what Caserio was staying ahead of was, listen, whether we change it and modify it or not, there will be drama with Stephon Diggs if he feels like he's being underpaid or that he's locked down for too long. So the Texans got Stephon Diggs basically in a contract here where he was on his best behavior and he was going to do everything and check off every box in terms of leadership and everything else like that. Where now he's got a boatload of guaranteed money and he's in a new place, and now maybe he shows up to OTAs and he's going to pass the physical, but he doesn't have that same incentive to just toe the line the way he did when he was with the Texans. And I feel I'm kind of happy about it, because as many times as the Texans have screwed themselves over by trying to copy the Patriots or make Rex Burkhead their feature back or anything else like that, I feel like the Texans may have pulled one over on the Patriots. Because the Patriots, the common ties between those two organizations, you know that people from the Patriots talk to people from the Texans about what Stephon Diggs was like last year.
Sure.
And I'm guessing the people from the Texans said he was awesome. He was a dream. He was everything we would have wanted. I wish he would have stayed healthy. And now they might be getting the other version of Stephon Diggs.
Yeah. To me, there was a situation for the Texans. Like, it was perfect. As you said, they move the money up, you get him on the 1 year deal essentially. And if he stays healthy, who knows? But it was almost like kind of catching lightning in the bottle, in the sense for the Texans. Like, they to me, understand the person, okay? And there's an inherent risk with that person and Stephon Diggs, not with the injury history, but with the character, the guy. And maybe we're seeing that now. Maybe we're seeing that, you know, with the boats and the chicks and the drugs and all that stuff, you know, that surfaced on the video last week that's made its rounds now. Maybe that's something that the Texans were kind of very, you know, keen on in terms of like the character of Stephon Diggs. Like, this is not something we necessarily want to roll with in the future that he's capable of. You'd like to have the football player, but you don't want to have to deal with the, you know, other stuff. Yeah. Like the Patriots are now.
As of 12 hours ago, this was after he had already practiced. Stephon Diggs still has to pass a full physical. Ian Rappaport reports, and this is always interesting the way they frame these, that the Patriots have no plans to cut Stephon Diggs.
Like, that didn't mean anything.
That's not what Zolak said. Zolak said it was on the table. So, right, they have no plans. I remember when the Patriots had no plans to trade Jimmy Garoppolo. And then, because Schefter reported that, like, oh, this is ridiculous. The Patriots have no plans to trade Jimmy Garoppolo. And then a month or two later, they traded Jimmy Garoppolo. So, I think anything could happen at this point, depending on how Stephon Diggs feels about everything.
I trust Florio's reporting. In this little excerpt towards the end of his piece written last night said, until he passes a full physical, and in parentheses, including as to the injured knee, he's entitled to nothing. And that wrinkle gives rise to another question that recently became very relevant. If the Patriots decide to cut Diggs, do they owe him anything? He is like, I would call them escalators. Maybe they're called something differently. But Diggs would get $12 million with $4 million being paid within 2 weeks of execution of the contract. $4 million due on October 31st, $4 million due on March 31st. It makes it sound like that he's already been paid $4 million. But this is the kicker. He has not passed a full physical, and he is not practiced until yesterday. So I'd be interested in following this reporting, because he did practice yesterday, which means, shouldn't he have already passed a physical?
I don't know, because the full physical, you could get into the weeds on this too much, but like full physical might mean like cleared and ready to play in a regular season game or full contact football, whatever it might be. He might be cleared for some things, but not others. So I don't know.
Yeah. That's interesting, man. That's interesting. I do feel like, the Texans kind of skated on this situation, though.
What they need is, if I'm Stephon Diggs, I'm calling the Astros doctors up there for the, hey, could you just give me a full physical and tell me where I am? And they're like, okay, they look up and down, and Diggs himself might say, should you guys give me an MRI or something? Astros doctors, no, that's dumb. That's dumb. Yeah.
You're 60%. You're good to go.
Those are overrated. Yeah.
Somebody texted earlier about CJ Stroud's shoulder being 60% broken, but... He'll be fine.
Okay, tell me where you feel on this, because one of the reports about Yordan Alvarez are that he can play with the bone partially broken, but it's a matter of pain. It's a matter of pain tolerance after that. Hmm. I don't feel awesome about that. Yeah,
no.
Yeah. He's played through the hand issues before, but as he said this time, it felt different this time.
What are we talking about?
Most alarming things, like when Dana Ford was talking to when Robert Ford was talking to Dana Brown the other day on 790, Dana Brown said something basically like, well, he said it felt different this time, so we probably should have maybe investigated it further. I'm like, yeah, I'm not a medical professional, but I feel like whenever anybody says, well, I've had this before, but this time feels different, that you might want to investigate it a little bit more.
Yeah, look. But Yordan said something, you know, in response to that, too, about it feeling different. I do feel like, at least to a small degree, that the Astros medical staff and Dana Brown are they take a little bit too much heat in these player injuries like this. Like, something has to be put on the player itself, like in trying to, like, push through an injury. Because it sounds, at least to a small degree, like Yordan tried to do that, take it upon himself to push through that injury.
Well, that was one of Yordan's comments kind of sounded like he might have turned down the opportunity to get more imaging.
Yeah.
And which is just strange because it's a hand. It's not like you have to do a 4-hour MRI of your brain and you're claustrophobic or something. You don't want to go in that MRI machine. Everything about the situation is weird.
We've got the actual quotes, and we'll go through that a little bit later on in the show. Seth Payne, Sean Bajani in for Sean Pendergast. Coming up next, talking about the Astros. Here's the lineup the Astros should be rolling with going forward. Do you agree or disagree? We'll break it down next. It's Sports Radio 610.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Grilling season is in full swing, and Whole Foods Market has the essentials to make summer meals simple, flavorful, and affordable. With great everyday prices across the store, it's easy to build a crowd-pleasing spread without sacrificing quality. The 365 by Whole Foods Market brand offers a wide selection of grilling favorites, like no antibiotics ever chicken thighs, ground beef, wild-caught salmon burgers, and uncured hot dogs. There are also plenty of sides to choose from, including organic salad kits, kettle cooked chips, tortilla chips, and bold zesty salsas. For toppings and marinades, look for organic condiments like no sugar added ketchup and yellow mustard, plus spice rubs and sauces to bring extra flavor. To round things out, pick up sparkling water, organic lemonade, and pints of ice cream, plus organic cake cones for an easy summer dessert. There are so many ways to save on summer grilling favorites at Whole Foods Market.
Sean Pendergast and Seth Payne. I'm Sean Bajani in for Pendergast. If you'd like to be a part of the show, text in 713-572-4610.
How late were we coming back in? You and I were having a conversation, and we just didn't realize we were coming back in.
I wouldn't say late. I would say,
okay, good.
You know, you want to get technical, maybe a couple seconds.
Okay, good. I felt bad. I was demanding that you explain the Bill Simmons appeal to me because I've never gotten it.
Well, I listen to him far less nowadays than I used to. But I was telling you, like, I enjoyed his delivery, and he, you know, now he just talks about Boston stuff, and I don't care about Boston stuff. But he always seemed to like further the discussion, you know. And ask,
I feel like he throws a bunch of crap out there, and every now and then it's like, oh, yeah, that's a really good idea. But the expense of that is that he throws out, for every one thing that's really interesting, he says nine things that are absolutely ridiculous.
Like his preposterous trade idea for the Celtics and Rockets swinging a deal for Jaylen Brown. Like, of course, that would be convenient for you, Boston Celtic fan. Makes no sense for the Rockets.
I don't, because a lot of people that I really like, Meltzer and I used to butt heads about this all the time. Meltzer, who I really respect and like, loves Bill Simmons, and I just didn't get it. So I don't, I've always just tried to figure it out, and it's just one of those things where obviously he's done very well, and yet he doesn't appeal to me personally. What would he say about this Astros lineup that you're about to roll out?
Well, I was going to ask you, does this appeal to you?
Jacob Melton, do you really? I mean,
well,
he's like, who would he be as a Sopranos character? I don't know.
I don't either. I haven't watched it yet.
Got big
shout out, Irwin. My bad,
me.
Bro.
Yeah.
One of our listeners, Irwin, gave me the complete box set of The Sopranos. He mailed it to the station. And I watched one episode that night about a year ago, and I have not watched episode two yet. I need to watch it.
Wait, what do you, like a box set?
I didn't know those still existed.
Well, what do you put in it?
Not VHS, but DVD.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I haven't done it yet. I saw Patrick Creighton tweet this out yesterday. I imagine he talked about it on his show last night. I was out. So he was rolling solo, and he says there's one particular lineup that the Astros should be rolling with going forward. I don't know that I can necessarily disagree with it, but maybe for all but one. But even still, you mentioned Jacob Melton, the way that that guy had been hitting in AAA, it's hard to disagree with. But he says Jacob Melton should be your regular left fielder. Shea Whitcomb, who's been tearing the cover off the ball for the Space Cowboys, hit like five homers in 3 days' time this past week, should be your everyday second baseman. And Jose Altuve should be your designated hitter until Yordan Alvarez returns.
Okay.
Buy or sell that?
All right, because I try to defer to Patrick on a lot of baseball stuff because he's very, very good at it. I guess where does he get this faith in Melton and Whitcomb at the major league level that's what you should be rolling out there? Like, why Whitcomb instead of Mauricio Dubon at second base? Where does this all fit in?
Okay, so there's kind of a two-part here, and I if you understand Patrick and his baseball take on what the Astros are actually doing this season, I think he's termed it as kind of like a soft reset. Uh-huh. And that's something that, you know, we had conversations about in the offseason, and with the Kyle Tucker trade and what they got back for him and Isak Paredes now, well, that worked out. Hayden Wisniewski, what he was doing until he got hurt, and Cam Smith, obviously, now seeming to round into form and settle in as the everyday right fielder. It became, can you win in a soft reset? I think with the addition of Jacob Melton and Shea Whitcomb, I think you're starting to see the Astros really kind of go all in on that soft reset. And in a year where they can absolutely afford to see what they have in these young guys while still trying to win and be competitive. I mean, the Mariners are not running away with this division. The Astros are a half game out as they interplay today. And so it's worked out. And you've done all of this without Yordan Alvarez, really,
right?
Without the real Yordan Alvarez. Even when he was healthy, the guy was not hitting the baseball. And it quite similarly, the Astros have had success without him in the lineup, like they did last year for 3 months without Kyle Tucker in the lineup. They went 47-31 with no Kyle Tucker. They've got the pieces to do it. So maybe this is an opportune time to see them and how much they can win with a younger group in a reset year.
Yeah, and I guess there's a little part of that where, hey, it is what it is, and you've just got to see what you have with these guys at some point, and where you're kind of teetering precariously right now on whether you're actually a good team or a less than average team or just an average team, then yes, like, let's do it now. And let's get whatever hiccups Cam Smith had in his first 20 or 30 games. Let's roll on through that and see what you have. As opposed to, you know what? If I had to choose between Shea Whitcomb every day at second base versus, you know, Brendan Rodgers is shuffling in and out with Mauricio Dubon, then I could live. I'll stomach some Shea Whitcomb hiccups a lot easier than I'll stomach Brendan Rodgers hiccups. I would feel better about that. Jacob Melton makes a lot of sense, if only just aside from his upside, because he's a lefty. And instead of having the fewest number of at-bats in Major League Baseball by lefties on a team is the Houston Astros right now. And it just makes it really easy for teams going into a series against the Astros to protect some of their lesser pitchers and just roll out what they want. So I'm okay. He's won me over.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's just the idea. It's the concept, yeah. Right? And look, Whitcomb, this is not his first rodeo. You know, he played 20 games with the Astros last year, so it's not like, you know, you have this wide-eyed kid up with the big club for the first time. He's seen Major League pitching before, and now the way that he's been performing and hitting at the minor league level, let's see if that can translate. And the Astros do have the ability to be a little bit more patient, I would say, at that particular position, second base, because listen to these numbers, Seth. Like, second base defensive runs saved this season in 492 innings. They're plus two, the Astros are. And that's some iteration of Jose Altuve, which I think to date, somehow he's like a plus three.
Yeah, he's much better at second base than he's actually played well when he doesn't have to do it every night. He's played well when he's at second base.
In like 11 games, but whatever. Yeah. Like, it's been a positive. Brendan Rodgers, he can't hit worth a lick. That's been an absolute failure of a signing so far for the Astros to this point. Mauricio Dubon, he could play second base and you would be a plus defensive team and better for it. But is he an everyday player versus would he be better in his role that is best suited for him as that super utility guy? He could become that super utility guy for you again if, in fact, Shea Whitcomb works out at second base and the defense isn't bad. Whitcomb's played all over this spring. I mean, this season for the Space Cowboys. He's played at second, short, third, in the outfield. He's played at first base. He's DH'd. He's been all over the place. They give him an opportunity to kind of settle in, play every day. Who knows what you could get from Shea Whitcomb?
Yeah, that's a – no, and they are – look, it's not like all of a sudden if Yordan came back and played exactly the way classic Yordan plays, that alone makes this a good offense. It does help everybody else around him in the lineup as well as adding his individual stats to it. But for this to be a genuinely – you know, championship caliber team, they need some extra juice above and beyond Yordan Alvarez returning. And the upside there isn't really there with Mauricio Dubon unless you end up with him on one of his, you know, hot streaks that every player gets in his career.
Yeah.
It's certainly not there with Brendan Rodgers, where at the very least, with Shea Whitcomb, without having to trade anybody or do anything at all, there's upside there. And as there is with Jacob Melton. And that's where, it's a matter of just kind of changing your expectations about, all right, well, what are they this year? And are we addressing the reality of that? They're just not a very, they're a very mediocre offensive team this year.
You know, the problem with this whole idea for me, and I haven't talked to Patrick about this, but look, on the surface, it sounds good while Yordan's out. But when Yordan returns, hopefully this is a very short term kind of a thing and he's back sooner than later. But what do you do with Altuve? If you're going to DH him while Yordan is out, Yordan returns, he's going to be the DH. Now you're stuck with making a decision on where to primarily play Jose Altuve. And is that in left field again? Because that experiment, like from a metric standpoint, hasn't really worked out.
It hasn't, but it's not like he's been atrocious in left field.
Right.
I think a lot of it too, some of his negatives in left field were, it was more... At least it was more comical early in the season when he couldn't get the ball out of his glove. Now it's very clear at times, especially if plays against the wall at home, that where even playing the carom or understanding how to time his jump, he's leaving some big plays out there on the table. If you go to the old, the original Moneyball where they had, what's his name, the catcher who started playing first base, Scott Hatteberg, right? And Hatteberg was atrocious at first base over the first half season there, and then he started to figure it out. There is that element of like, you just got to, give the guy some reps and time out there to figure it out.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not nearly as down on Altuve in left field as a lot of people are. Maybe my standards aren't high enough, I suppose.
Well, I mean, look, I'm not either, to be honest with you, but I just said it's not good from a metric standpoint. You know, this year's numbers in left field, whatever iteration it has been between Altuve and whoever they've put out there, they're minus nine in defensive runs saved. Now, I think Altuve was probably like a minus three or something like that. Maybe it's a little higher than that. It's just, How can you make this an optimal situation for you defensively and offensively? I think they got the offense figured out if Whitcomb hits.
Right. Well, so Altuve's -3 in left field. So -3 runs saved, which is, but you got to remember at second base last year, when people say the experiment.
He was like -7 last year.
He was -9.
Was he?
He was -9. Yeah. It was, he was atrocious. And I, it was weird. I think a lot of people, the same thing happened with Kyle Tucker. A lot of people were, refused to accept that Altuve wasn't a good second baseman anymore. And it really all started when they got rid of the shift and he just had to cover more ground. That it felt like more of a shock. Like, why are you taking away a guy who's a good second baseman and putting him in left field? Because he actually wasn't a good left baseman anymore defensively.
Yeah.
So the sum total of it is that, like, so far it's still, at least it's a lesser evil with him out there in left field. And presumably I think he will continue to get better in left field. But yeah, him at DH as much as possible is preferable. But I also don't need Yordan Alvarez showing up on the IL again if and when he eventually returns.
Yeah, I don't need him playing left field more than Altuve, I think, from a safety perspective.
Well, and I think part of it too is, while Altuve was slumping, then it really became a question of, like, okay, how much of this is because he's also learning how to play left field?
Yeah.
Probably didn't help that, man, some of his better games as he started the turnaround, he was playing second base and maybe felt more comfortable there.
Mm.
That part of it, I'm not as down on it. I don't want to call it an experiment. They want to keep his bat in the lineup, and he was becoming an extreme liability at second base. Oh, the other one, yeah, the Kyle Tucker over the last couple of years. It was really starting to annoy me when people wouldn't agree with me that Kyle Tucker was not the same guy defensively anymore.
And he wasn't.
And a lot of it looked like he was just being lazy out there. That's where it made it a lot easier to say goodbye to Kyle Tucker, because he's got that dopey look on his face, and it didn't look like he was trying all that hard in right field.
That's a fair point. I can't disagree with you on that one. He's Seth Payne, Sean Bajani in for Sean Pendergast. Coming up next, we'll roll into the 8 o'clock hour. Are we going to be petty next? We've got the petty cast.
Who and what are you petty about? Who are we petty about? We celebrate all of their pettiness, especially college baseball coaches. Chef's kiss to you. This is brilliant.
Next.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Grilling season is in full swing, and Whole Foods Market has the essentials to make summer meals simple, flavorful, and affordable. With great everyday prices across the store, it's easy to build a crowd-pleasing spread without sacrificing quality. The 365 by Whole Foods Market brand offers a wide selection of grilling favorites, like no antibiotics ever chicken thighs, ground beef, wild-caught salmon burgers, and uncured hot dogs. There are also plenty of sides to choose from, including organic salad kits, kettle cooked chips, tortilla chips, and bold zesty salsas. For toppings and marinades, look for organic condiments like no sugar added ketchup and yellow mustard, plus spice rubs and sauces to bring extra flavor. To round things out, pick up sparkling water, organic lemonade, and pints of ice cream, plus organic cake cones for an easy summer dessert. There are so many ways to save on summer grilling favorites at Whole Foods Market.